The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. It must be Saturday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. Or it might be Wednesday night from 9 to 10 p.m. We're on twice a week to talk about your career, talk about various aspects of the workplace, talk about ways that you can be more successful, more engaged, more persuasive. We do a lot on the show about leadership and management and making people better employees and more engaged employees. That's one of our themes. Tonight, we're going to talk about an interesting subject. And I do remember this guest quite well. He was fantastic on the radio. And I think he should have his own podcast, but he's a busy guy, so I haven't talked him into it yet. But his name is Mark Pfister. He's the CEO and chief board consultant of M.A. Pfister Strategy Group, an executive management and board consulting firm that serves as a strategic advisory council for executives and boards in the public, private, and nonprofit sector. So what is a board? Everybody knows there's a board of directors for every company. There's a board of directors for every HOA, for every homeowners association. There are boards that are very minimal in terms of responsibility and how to get onto them, how to package yourself and how to execute. And then there are boards that are really complex, really big stakes, lots going on right now. For example, the board of Twitter, you know, is probably aflame, you know, with this Elon Musk deal. And is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? It looks like it is going to happen now. So there's a tremendous amount of behind the scenes corporate stuff that happens in the boardroom. And we're going to get a bird's eye view tonight from Mark. He's the founder and CEO of the International Board Director Competency Designation, Education and Certification Program, a board director certification course recognized globally. He's a board director and board consultant, having worked with hundreds of public, private, and nonprofit organizations and their directors with focus in strategy, governance, and technology/cybersecurity. He speaks at over 60 events yearly on his international speaking tours on the topics of strategy, building an effective board for your company, and becoming an exceptional board director candidate. He's chairman and CEO of Integral Board Group and the creator of the board as a service, like SaaS, engagement model, which is credited with inventing a new industry. Mark completed the Harvard Business School's executive education program for board directors. He holds a cyber intelligence professional board certification through the McAfee Institute, publishes a monthly board director, board advisor, and C-level digital publication, reaching over 28,000 business leaders in over 70 countries. And his book, Across the Board, The Modern Architecture Behind an Effective Board of Directors, reached Amazon's number one new release in corporate governance and is in circulation in over 70 countries. Mark served as an engineering officer in the U.S. Merchant Marines. So, Mark, welcome to Radio Jumpline.
Scott, great to be back with you again.
And we had such a good time the last time you were here. And the show got a thousand listens, you know, from people who were, when I posted it on LinkedIn. So we're going to do it again. And this time we're going to, you know, take it from a different, you know, vantage point. But I just have to say, you were fabulous the last time, and I expect nothing less this time. If you ever had a question in your mind about what is a board, how to get on a board, why are some people on boards and other people are not, then this is really the show to be listening to. And you're not going to hear it on any other show in the universe, because there's no other show like Radio Jobline. So let's talk about why boards are so important and so I think necessary in the case of governance of a company. And then we can talk about how to maybe be on a board.
Sure. Well, it's a great question when we first say, what is a board? What is its purpose? Why is it there? And typically, when we talk about a board, we say it is the governance arm or the policing arm of the organization. And that policing arm or governance oversight is directly focused to the CEO, or in some cases for a nonprofit, we'll call it the executive director of the organization. Which begs the question now, well, who does the board report into? If the CEO has someone to report into, who does the board report into? And typically from a public company standpoint, the board is reporting into its shareholders. So you're never the, I like to say that you're never the top dog. You always have somebody that you're reporting into.
Right.
Now, if we expand on this viewpoint of the value of the board, some CEOs will truly view the board as the group that's going to check on me and make sure I'm doing the right thing. But a savvy CEO will create a very tight relationship with a board and use them as their sounding board, as their group that has the experience and the expertise that ideas and challenges or concepts can be bounced off of. Those are truly the best operating principles that a CEO can think of in leveraging the board, not just from a governance viewpoint and making sure the transparency and the disclosure is there.
Okay. So there's boards of varying degree. So you might have, for example, the Long Island Association, right? A pretty big organization, sure. Lots of members. They have a board. How do you get on that board? Well, you pay your membership dues. And you have something to offer, and that's good enough. You know, there's really no vetting that I know of that goes on with some of these like nonprofit organizations that don't have that many people involved. But then I start thinking about big companies and how, you know, the value of those big companies, the stocks, the cash, you know, all that they do, all that they command, and who's really in charge of all of that. So let's say that you want to be on a board. You know, who's good candidates to be on a board?
Sure. This is the million-dollar question as it relates to today's world. Mm-hmm. And COVID really forced this change of mindset for many. So the desire to join a board or even senior level leadership in organizations is really high right now. It really is the buzzword in what people are looking to do in the reevaluation, I'll say, of their lives and their professional careers. So there has been an amazing push right now, and the volume of those applying for board seats is massive right now. So when we first talk about being a great board director, we have to get out of our mindset that simply because you led an organization or you had the title of a CEO, or you had great ideas for this organization and it grew. Those are good, but they're not necessarily the criteria that make you a great board director. Mm-hmm. So I like to think of this in really a few different phases. First off is, are you a viable director? Do you work well in a team environment? Are you respectful when you disagree with somebody, right? There is a way to respectfully move on from something, maybe agree to disagree, and that's mm-hmm. why we have voting on boards.
Right.
When we move from that, we also look at, have you packaged yourself properly? So everybody believes that, you know, I had this CEO position or I was a vice president in an organization. I deserve to be on a board. Mm-hmm. But we have to think differently in how we package. So you'll see the mistake made over and over again with candidates, board candidates, submitting bios or CVs or resumes for a board appointment. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that technically we're not really... You shouldn't really be submitting a resume or a CV. They're actually called board documents. It's a different type of structure. And the reason for that is that it draws out the senior level aspect of your experience, the governance focus, the strategy focus, the innovation focus, and the integration of how those work together. So it's very easy, even in the submission, let's say for clients I work with currently, rebuilt their nominating committee process. They asked me to stick around to help out with their interviewing and their vetting. They had well over 1,500 submissions. Only 20 of them were submitted correctly. Everybody sent resumes or CVs or professional bios. That's not what you send for this. Mm. It's a very easy way to tell if you are viewing board directorship as a hobby versus a discipline.
Right.
Now, that packaging or the process of going through that packaging, which is, you mentioned our global education and certification course, mm-hmm. we teach that in depth because that leads you to the next phase of actually getting to the interview. And Scott, I believe today we're in the realm where it's harder to get to the interview for a board appointment than it is to get the appointment. If you make it to the interview, you should be able to, and it's in your hands to actually land that position because there's very few candidates at that point.
Okay, so the one question came to mind immediately when you said that is, who are you sending this information mm-hmm. to? And is there an active search for a board member? And when do you need that? Does there have to be a board opening? Or is it good practice, like it is with job candidates, to find the CEO, send him your resume, and say, look, I've got all these great skills and talents. If you ever need anybody like me, I'm here. You know, so how does this whole thing get started?
Sure. Typically, a board has to announce they're looking for a new candidate or to make a new appointment. Mm-hmm. And that can be one candidate they're looking for or multiple, depending on mandatory retirement ages, term limits on boards are a big thing currently. But we're seeing this turnover, and that has to do with the baby boomer retirement and all of this changeover we're seeing right now at all senior level positions throughout the world. Now, to be viewed as a candidate, how do you, your question is, how do you get in front of those areas? How are you being viewed as a candidate? There's this common misperception out there that you have to be on some large company's database, such as the, well, I won't mention the names, but the companies that do the searching and the vetting. Mm-hmm. And it used to be that most organizations, especially in the public space, were reaching out to these companies that did placement and search to do the whole process. Mm-hmm. That is changing. The trending now is that boards are pulling back the end-to-end candidate search appointments, vetting process back into the boards. They want more control of this right now. They want to see the process through end to end. So what does that mean for opportunities and how you get these opportunities? I like to say that we want to change our mindset that, yes, if we think of tools on our tool belt, some of those tools may be that we put our names into a database for all different sizes of search firms, the big five, the medium size, and even the smaller, more boutique firms right now that are quite popular with many organizations of all sizes. That's maybe one or two of the 15 tools on your tool belt. What I think is more successful and quite frankly, more fun is this concept of inbound marketing or inbound content marketing. And you're probably very familiar with this with your background. Mm-hmm. And that really is, how are you drawing these opportunities to you? Mm-hmm. How does somebody find you and say, you know what, we need a really savvy nominating committee chair, or we need someone with deep financial background to serve in our audit committee? A majority of those searches, whether there's a formal firm or company involved or not from this vetting or search company, LinkedIn is really one of the big spots right now. 85% of board directors are being found currently globally through LinkedIn.
So kind of like a recruiter would look for a candidate.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
So these people are recruiters, Mark? Is it like a recruiting firm?
Well, a nominating committee can at certain stages act as if they were a recruiting firm because they're looking for the talent. They're looking out there. And many nominating committees are getting more involved in that actual search. They want to know also. And some of them make their own recommendations. That goes back to the old school view of friends and family. You get the appointment. Today, it's friends and family get into the funnel to be put through the nominating committee process, which is still fine. I mean, if you're one of those people that's viewed as a viable director and you have those connections, you should leverage that.
All right, well, let me just jump in because I didn't ask you something at the top of the show. Is there money involved with being a board director? And is it always the case? Is it sometimes the case? Is it, you know, like what percentage of board people actually make some bucks doing this?
Sure. So yes, it is a career. And that goes back to the discipline aspect of this. Some will use this as a supplementary income that works alongside whatever role they're in currently. And that's why you see CEOs that sit on two other boards. And some companies are limiting the number of boards that can be that these CEOs or C-level can sit on outside of their own organization for obvious reasons of focus and time commitment. But there are most private companies compensate. Almost every public company compensates. And that compensation, the model of that is changing and has been changing over the last 10 years. So we've moved further away from a pay-as-you-go model, meaning that in the past you were paid for the committees you sat on, a certain stipend. You were paid for the number of meetings you attended, both for the general board meetings as well as the committee meetings. We're moving more to this flat rate. I call it the flat rate society now when we talk about board directors, where they're offered their yearly compensation, the cash compensation. And then the best practice today is for 50% or more of that compensation to be issued in equity. And that then is the tie to the performance of the organization for those directors. Mm-hmm. It's not just I get paid whether the company flies or I get paid whether the company crumbles. Now they're tied directly to that bottom line. I'm a big fan of that.
That makes sense. And I'm an outsider and it still makes sense.
Yeah. And some of that is either based off of immediate vesting. In most cases, you're going to see if it's used as part of the equity components of the compensation, it's usually going to be a 2 or 3 year vesting schedule on the equity components.
Okay. So would it be a fair question to ask if you could give me, say, a range of what people might be able to earn. Because you may, if you, the numbers are big enough, you might have people grabbing a pencil and paper and going, wait a minute, I want to get in the funnel too.
Yeah.
What is the range? I know it's really hard, Mark, but just a ballpark, small company and large company.
Yeah, I can give you pretty detailed numbers on this only because of a study I did about 6 months ago on this topic. And this is a global viewpoint of it. I'm going to talk right now from the U.S. lens. And I'll just mention starting off that many other companies are fractions of the percentage of what these numbers I'm going to mention, both in cash compensation as well as equity based on the region. Mm-hmm. But this is what we typically see. The average for a private company compensated director, average and median for that matter, is about $55,000 cash outlay. Mm-hmm. And roughly about the same, up to $100,000 in some sort of equity compensation, typically with a two or three year vesting schedule. Now, don't let that fool you, because there are boards that are much lower, 10 grand in the private realm, mm-hmm. and all the way up to hundreds of thousands of dollars as it relates to the cash compensation mm-hmm. and the equity component all in.
Safe to assume, though, that a bigger company, a bigger public company is going to pay more.
So let's talk about the public. That's the private side right now. Public side, typically you're looking at that $85,000 to about $185,000 in cash outlay, mm-hmm. somewhere in that range of average. And then roughly equal or more as it relates to the equity. Some of the public companies will also have sign-on bonuses, which means that you're vested immediately for $100,000, $200,000 sign-on of equity. A mm-hmm. Portion of that typically is vested immediately as part of the day that you start. And then as part of the yearly compensation of the cash outlays I just mentioned, those are typically on longer vesting schedules, 2 to 3 years again. So it can be quite lucrative. But I don't want to miss the point to make that this is a huge commitment. And I think the disconnect here is that many people hear these numbers and they say, wow, that's big money. But they don't realize the time commitment. And I can tell you right now, there's a time commitment to this, and this number will shock people. But the minimum, let me state it this way. I've never seen a successful board director of a public, private, or nonprofit organization put in less than 200 hours a year for the base functionality. Mm. Now, we look at this on a matrix and we say, if you're serving as the board chair, you tack on another 50 hours a year. If you're serving on a committee, you tack on another 40, 50 hours a year. If you're serving as a committee chair, you tack on another 10 to 15 hours on top of the 40 or 50 you're putting in. So you can see, it's not just, I'm going to show up at board meetings. It is typically a 250 to 300 hour a year commitment per board, per company that you sit on.
Mm, interesting.
So we have to keep that in mind to be successful in these
roles.
Yeah, because
if you have a full-time demanding job, like you're the CEO of another company, right? So where do you find that 250 hours?
That's right. Or more, multiplied by the number of boards.
Right.
And the component that outed all of these directors that were current CEOs and sitting on four or five other boards was COVID. Mm. So these emergency board meetings were called by all these companies at the same time. And many of these boards had half of they didn't have a quorum to vote because their board directors were spread so thin. Mm. So we have to keep that in mind now to say that we're looking for people that not only have the time, but are dedicated and understand. We'll talk in a moment about what their roles are in those positions too. Mm-hmm.
All right. So what about your overall viability? I mean, how do you know if you're a person that should even be in this playing field?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a great question. And I think this is the million-dollar question of, is this a field that I go down that path for? And let me first say that in today's world, you no longer need to have previously had the CEO title or a C-level title. Boards are looking for the value that's brought into the boardroom that can act as a guide for innovation, governance, and strategy for the overall organization. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see some of these titles that we see for technology and cybersecurity and some of the new buzzwords relating to human capital, which is kind of the human resources area mm-hmm. of knowledge on steroids as it relates to mm-hmm. governance. So I don't want to by any means say that to be a great board director, you have to have served in these titled positions. And that's really, you know, most boards have wisened up to that, quite frankly. But you do want to be aware and be able to be one of those experts that can weigh in on topics, not push points to win, but ask questions to elevate the outcomes. And that really, it's more of a personality aspect I'm going down right now. High emotional intelligence.
Sounds like leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah. High emotional intelligence, high mindfulness intelligence, even what we call AQ or even AQ is adversity quotient or your grit, right? Those types of things are extremely important to make sure that there's a balance in that to be able to work in a team environment.
So here I am thinking that I'm great in marketing and social media and staffing and right sizing an organization and so on, but I'd be a crappy board member. I don't have any of the things you just said. So it really, you really need to rethink what your skill set is. And more importantly, how we're going to package that skill set.
Absolutely. The packaging is extremely important. And look, even for those registrants in our program, and it spans from very experienced directors that want to modernize their approach and be in the candidate list for companies into the future, as well as aspiring directors that really don't have any background in this whatsoever as it relates to governance and the strategy and the interrelationship of those. The key in all of this is, you're absolutely right, is to package this correctly and show that you are viewing board directorship from the proper lens.
Okay, we're going to talk a lot more about this in the next half of the show. You're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Prezesor. We have Mark Pfister with us. Nobody knows more about being on a board, how to get on a board, or why you'd even want to be on a board than Mr. Pfister, the CEO and Chief Board Consultant of M.A. Pfister Strategy Group. If you'd like to be on Radio Jobline, write to me, scottp118@gmail.com. Happy to have you or your idea on the show, scottp118@gmail.com. Don't forget to connect with me on LinkedIn. We'll be right back, folks.
May the four winds blow you safely home. Roll away.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Prezesor, right here on LI News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Prezesor. We are here on the radio tonight with Mark Pfister, the CEO and Chief Board Consultant of M.A. Pfister Strategy Group. If you missed the opening read, you missed the gigantic bio, which this is a very credentialed gentleman you're listening to, folks, and we're lucky to have him. Before we start back with Mark, I just want to mention BizShout. BizzShout.com, a website that we have followed here on Radio Jobline for about 5 years. They keep on improving it. It's somewhere between LinkedIn and Facebook. Got elements of both. We think it's going to be very, very big. You can do a creative resume on BizShout. Just go to it, check it out, click the creative resume. It's free. And you can also put all your content, videos, whatever you have there, and drive people to that site. So we support it. We love Charlie Lee, the CEO. And now back to the show. So, Mark, we were talking about an interview you conduct. And if a person doesn't get a certain question right, now this is right up my alley, the interview's over. So cover that for us.
Yeah. Well, one of my go-to questions, and look, if somebody has made it to the interview phase, and typically it's a very small percentage of people that have submitted, hopefully they submitted properly, they're chosen based on their skill set and their acumen and their background. Now they're ready for their, hopefully they're ready for their interview. And over time, just by doing something, you learn kind of the tricks to get to, is this person really going to be a great candidate on these boards? Mm-hmm. So one of the ones the question I always go to, and I'm going to share it today because I don't really think there's a way to fake this. So even if I tell you this or anybody, it still is going to force the research to be done in the background to fully get this without any type of hesitation in the answer. And my question is the following. Tell me about your understanding of the interrelationship between strategy and governance. And it's not a trick question, but what I'm trying to drive to here is that once a board at an organization with a CEO has set the goals of the organization, the goals equate to the what and the why of the organization. Mm-hmm. Once that is done, the board is really only focused in one area, which is I'm going to oversee the how. The how is the strategy. So that quick description I just gave to you, if a board candidate is able to explain that they know where they're going to focus their efforts, their research, their digging, their preparation, their questions for that matter, they know that they're asking questions that are relating to the organization through the CEO of what is going on in the how area or the strategy area. And then once we hear the answers on that, as a director, we're saying to ourselves, hopefully, is that in line with what the goals are, the what and the why? Mm. And that very simple description I just gave you, and it equates back to a very simple diagram also. If that can be explained to me, it's almost like you had me at hello in the early stages of the interview.
Well, the way I would have taken a shot at that is I would have said that, of course, they're interrelated, because who's monitoring the strategy? If the strategy that you're executing is breaking a law, or doing something worse, or infecting people, or annoying people, or breaking some tenet or of principle, then the strategy is loose with no constraints, no rules, boundaries, limitations. So that would have been my answer.
Yeah, and it's dead on, but I can tell you that the majority of boards still to this day are so laser focused only on governance. In fact, when you hear me speak, mm-hmm. I don't mention the word governance first. I talk about strategy first. If you ask me the true responsibility of a director, I'm going to tell you strategy and then the word governance, because they have to be linked together. And the number of directors that are not thinking that way in today's boardroom leads us to many of the case studies we're seeing out there. Theranos is a great example. Again, in the news right now, we're seeing the end of some of the court cases, of course, with the founders and other folks involved. But that board is a prime example where they were laser focused and not even that well in the governance area, but never linked the governance to the strategy components of the organization. They would have known very early on that there were glaring indicators that were just not right.
So I got to ask you, because of the polarizing politics here in the United States, I mean, we can all agree that politics here in the United States has gotten really, really ugly. I mean, nobody from either side would really dispute that. But does it pervade the boardroom? That's what I've been wondering, to think about. So sort of everybody's on one side, or maybe not everybody, but most of the people are on one side of the coin. And then somebody's now coming into the board that's on the other side of the political. Now, does that create waves?
Absolutely. And there are many, and I'm going to equate that question first and foremost to the structuring, or what I like to call the architecture of the board. Was it architected properly? Not just being looked at from a skill set viewpoint, but from a personality standpoint, a maturity standpoint. I mentioned earlier about this very important balance of emotional intelligence and mindfulness intelligence. One's reactive, one is more proactive. When you have that across every member of the board, and I believe every board member should be evaluated and tested for that in the early stages before their appointment. There are ways to measure that and to test that above and beyond just the interview process. But when that exists, those particular boards that have spent the time on that level of evaluation, the conversation is more free-flowing. And the biggest component of this is that it's not, political discussions are not focused on which side are you on. It's focused on the actual policy. How does this policy affect the people of this organization? Where do we need to position ourselves to help to make sure that this goes right? So think of party versus policy, and directors, any senior leaders really need to be focused more on the policy aspect of this. That all correlates back to the maturity, emotional intelligence, mindfulness intelligence of a director that's able to peel back all of that emotion and nonsense of all the discussion and, who's the better president or the policy. Focus this on policy. It makes it a lot easier.
And what about people that have infighting? Like, I'm thinking board members are powerful people, and they really can do a lot for a company, or they can pull away and do nothing. But I'm just thinking that you might have a lot of headbutting. Am I wrong? That everyone thinks that they're right, and that's why you hired them, because they're smart and they have a strong opinion and they have great emotional intelligence. So now if you tell me I'm wrong, you're taking away the fun.
Yeah. Well, first off, a truly balanced board is a balance also of the personality type. So you may have a few of the type A's. I like to think of all of us coming back to four personality type balances I look for on boards, and I design the boards. Analyst, diplomat, sentinel, which is the protector, and the explorer. Hmm. So any board that has a high concentration of one of those, or everybody on that board is of that personality type, it's not going anywhere good. So I look for that. It's not a detailed scientific study, but you can tell who kind of fits in very easily by discussions who fits into each one of those areas. Now, as it relates to this infighting or disagreement that is disrespectful, and this comes back to comments of what I like to call respectful dissent, we have to understand as directors that if we were given the respect of making our point, which we should be, and we were still outvoted, the minute those boardroom doors swing open to the public, we are all on the same page, meaning that we are all in agreement. And there's nothing that irks me more, Scott, than when the infighting or the lobbying happens, right? And there's a director that is so adamant that they disagree, they'll go on the record of their disagreements. They'll even maybe have a discussion with the CEO and say, listen, the board voted this, but I'm with you. I don't agree with this. That is all terrible behavior that undermines the true function of a board, mainly the governance aspect of it.
Yeah. Now, I was also thinking about the diversity. I would think, I don't know anything about this, but I'm just saying, I would think that as the years have ebbed on and the decades have turned into the next millennium, and now we're in the 2022s, are people now saying, you know what, we don't have a black female on the board, we don't have a Latino, we don't have, you know, are these factors, are they factors at all?
Yeah, absolutely. And the diversity and inclusion aspect on boards right now is a big talking point.
Okay.
And I like to say it's more than just a talking point because we are seeing action. But let me be clear about this. The diversity and inclusion component of this should really be focused on not color of skin or background or geography. I'm going to tie this together in a moment, so bear with me. But it should first be focused on the diversity of perspective that leads to diversity of thought that then leads to elevated outcomes. Now, we can get that through appointing what I like to say are historically underrepresented populations in the boardroom. That's my safest way of saying that. And it works. I mean, these boards, some of these boards are absolutely incredible by having all of these different lenses, really, is the way to look at this. But I caution many boards to say that let's not only view this from these superficial aspects, let's look deeper than this. Let's expect what we require on the board. Let's not undermine that, but also let's try to make it as diverse as possible. And those boards are quite incredible when they're done, when they're built and architected correctly.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about packaging yourself. Let's say now you've been listening to the show for a while and you go, well, this is me. This is me. I could be great at this. I have all the experience. I have the governance. I have the strategy. Okay, so how do you package yourself?
Sure. And there's a few pieces to this. I'll give the high level, but I'll also mention that if you give the website at the end, they can, your listeners can look at a way to actually—
No, give it now.
Well, Pfister Strategy, P-F-I-S-T-E-R, strategy.com. You'll see our board education and global certification program. The differentiator with that is that it includes not only modern day board operations, but all the components of packaging yourself in the modern—
And you would recommend someone take this course if they're gonna take this board route?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Right. Now, to further answer your question, Scott, we're in this realm today where there's so many people that want to be in the boardroom, but they're not spending the time to actually learn what does that mean. And not just what do I do once I'm there. I probably know now easily over 1,000 people that claim to be board ready. And you'll see a lot of programs that say get board ready. But the problem is that once they get the appointment, they may be board ready, but they will never land the board seat because they're not sending in the proper information. They have not been trained on how to change the lens on a question in an interview. They may think it's a very monolithic question with one expected answer back, but someone like me who's evaluating that candidate is looking for the depth of reasoning, the depth of thought, the integration of that and the knock-on effects, right? The strategy components of it. It's the full package that has to be focused on. And it's extremely easy in this realm to vet out the folks that have just simply not spent the time thinking about that or packaging themselves correctly.
Okay, so not unlike a job hunter has to do a huge amount of preparation.
Absolutely. In preparation, not just for packaging them themselves, but I'm also very much impressed when that candidate has done a significant amount of research on the company and the board, for that matter, that they are planning or hoping on joining.
Interesting. Okay. So we would do the same thing with a job hunter.
Yeah. Okay. This is probably even more in depth in the study, because you have to be laser focused on certain questions, again, that relate to governance and strategy, challenges the organization has had, equating that to how the board has interacted in with the CEO on solutioning those problems as well.
And I would think a law degree would come in handy.
It can, although not everybody on the board should have all the same background. So right. When we talk about the balance of skill set, I like to see a really diverse background of expertise and skill sets. Not everybody with law, not everybody with finance background. And something that may be interesting to your listeners is that a properly architected board for any company should really have no more than 25% of the members from the industry that that company serves. Mm-hmm. Now, it seems counterintuitive, but I can tell you that the pharmaceutical companies, the boards that I work with, as an example, they're all from the pharmaceutical field and background. There is no diversity of thought on those boards, or very little. Mm. And in some that allow me to infuse some of these different industries into their boardroom, into their appointments, they gain immensely from this, because they get the expertise of all other industries by doing that. And that's really the key, is this melting pot of industry as well.
But it sounds like they need... Every board needs someone like you. I'm not saying that you're available to everyone, but to sort of, you know, guide the process, you know, right? I mean, doesn't every board is formed or adds new members, you need someone impartial who doesn't have an agenda and who basically isn't really an external party that says, this is your guy?
It can absolutely help. As you can imagine, many of these boards are very secretive groups, or try to be. They don't want somebody coming in and meddling in their environments.
Right.
But the ones that are open for this, and I consider these boards to be the continuous learner or continuous learning type boards, which again is another great trait for a director to talk about and to convey and be actually as a continuous learner. Boards collectively that also are continuous learning boards, they are much more open to that outside input for something, as you're mentioning, such as the structure or the architecture of a board.
Okay. All right. So we were talking about what not to package. It's not a resume, nothing traditional. It's all different. What goes into your board presentation?
Sure. So first off, typically the first impression that you make, even if you have an in and you know somebody, you're still going to have to submit your documentation to typically the nominating committee or someone in the nominating committee, or maybe even an outside organization that's doing the search and the vetting. And in saying that, it's very easy for someone such as me who does some of that to see if somebody has done their homework again on have they submitted the right thing. So to your question, I'm typically looking for a package where even the file name does not say CV or resume, because I already know you're on the wrong track, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're called board documents correctly. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone asks you for your board CV or your board resume, we don't want to go and correct them, you know, if it's a client, but we will say, and you should think to yourself that I understand what they're asking for, but I also understand that the format of this is slightly different. So first off, if we only go into, say, the board bio, notice how I didn't say professional bio. Mm-hmm. Professional bio can be a little more meandering. We want to make sure that a board bio is also written in third person, so it's someone else from the outside talking about you. It gives you a different lens on how to present your information. And again, it's a laser focus on the governance and strategy areas of the positions that you've held. And then leading with that, and then ending with some sort of outside third party, such as our course and our certification, somebody else that says, yes, Scott is great at this, and mm-hmm. we've certified him in that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect. Now, that's the board bio. The second part of the board documents, with an S, board documents package, is called a board document. That is typically viewed as the equivalent of a CV or resume, but it's laid out very differently. And here's the difference of it. And I'll compare back to a resume. A resume is typically what was originally designed for an employee level position. These years I worked here. Then the following years I was promoted in this company and I had this title and I worked here. It's a chronology of reporting structure and tasks that you were that
so
you were given.
Is it written more like a narrative?
Well, this is the resume I'm saying, right? So this is what you don't want to submit for a board seat.
Right. Okay.
For a board seat, you're now focusing and laser focusing the thought process and the evaluation process to things that directly relate to the board. So in your board document, you start out with a board profile. It's probably the hardest paragraph someone would ever write in their life, because it's so precise, has to be precise and concise writing. But then you'll see the next area, which is board and board committee experience. You're going right into the area that correlates to the position you're applying for now. Mm-hmm. And some may say, well, I don't have any board experience or committee experience as of yet. And that's fine. You would move to the next area, which is called board level experience. And board level experience is focused on, you were not a seated, appointed, fiduciary voting board member, but you in some way were asked to present to the board or provide information, or you did research or a special project for the board. Those things are so valuable. They absolutely should be listed as part of your proper board documents.
Okay.
And then you move into any type of executive or senior level experience, if you have it, into those areas. And you'll notice that ordering I mentioned, we are extracting out and putting earlier in the process things that equate directly to board directors and board directorship. Mm-hmm. Why should I have to flip through multiple pages of a resume you sent me to try to figure out which things I would view as correlated to board directorship? Mm-hmm. You need to package yourself so I'm not searching for those things. If I'm searching for those things in your submission, you're already, it's already off the wrong
path. Well, now that's the same with a job candidate. When they send me a 6-page resume yeah. and I have to try to find what I'm looking for, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and one last thing that may be helpful to your listeners is, and this is probably true for any senior level position and definitely in the board space, we call this packaging your major and your three minors. Mm-hmm. Your major is typically where you spent a majority of your career, what your expertise is. You may have even gone to college for that particular area. So finance or legal, just to use some of the areas of focus you mentioned earlier. And that's the major. What most people miss, or most board candidates miss, is the next step in this, which is called your three minors. Mm-hmm. So the three minors are areas that directly correlate to common board committees. Mm. Tell me not just one board committee, or I have to guess which one board committee you fit into. Tell me the three that you add value, because the committees are the workhorses of the board. Mm-hmm. So anybody that joins a board, I would expect them to be functioning in at least one, maybe two committees. Mm-hmm. Point out to me which areas and which committees you fit best into, and then design the rest of your board bio and your board document to support your major and those three minors of committees.
Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. Okay, Mark, quickly, give us your company's website again, and do you have anything coming up you want to promote?
There's always something going on, I'll tell you. So if they go to, if your listeners go to the website, they can see webinars and speaking engagements. And
what's the website again?
So fisterstrategy.com, P-F-I-S-T-E-R, strategy.com.
Okay. And they'll see all the upcoming events and the course you mentioned before.
Absolutely.
And they can definitely get on board with, and get on board with getting on a board.
There you go.
Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. I mean, this is just such fascinating information.
It's a pleasure,
for
Scott.
Me, because I'm always on the job hunting side. So to learn about is another area is fascinating to me.
Thank you.
Come back again and see us again soon. If you have an idea for Radio Jobline, get you right to me, scottp118@gmail.com. I would be happy to have you on the show. Also, you must connect with me on LinkedIn, because I post every Radio Jobline after it's broadcast twice during the week. I post it on LinkedIn. And if you connect with me, you'll see these posts and you'll be able to have a collection of Jobline, or at least listen to a certain show based on the title. So connect with me on LinkedIn, Scott Possessor, P-A-S-S-E-S-E-R. We'll be back with another great show next week, folks. Happy hunting.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.